Welcome back to the SiteShed podcast. You guys listening to this show are obviously pretty tech savvy. So I want to ask you a question. What is your plan to implement AI into your trade business over the next 6 to 12 months? If you don't know the answer to that, then I thoroughly encourage you to go and check out tradiehub.net. It is amazing. You should see the stuff that we are doing over there with artificial intelligence to help you reduce labor costs and increase efficiency and a million other things. Go and check it out, tradiehub.net.
If making more profit in less hours sounds appealing to you, you are going to love this podcast where we discuss, first of all, how you can go about setting positive habits. Next, why you must understand your avatar. And then how systems can help you buy back your time while increasing your profits. If you want to get notified of all of our upcoming podcasts, make sure you hit subscribe. And while you're there, turn your notifications on. Also, while you're in YouTube, head back across to our back catalog where you'll get access to over 300 of our amazing business trade-specific podcasts. Enjoy the show. I look forward to your comments.
Benson, welcome to the SiteShed podcast.
Thank you, Mr. Matt. I'm so excited to be here today.
Mate, thanks for your patience. I know we've had a bit of a bumpy lead up to this with a few flooding issues and things like that, but I'm glad we finally got you on the show.
Absolutely. I totally understand that things happen.
Yep.
And we have to adjust accordingly to go with the flow.
Pardon the pun, go with the flow. For those of you guys that don't know, we got flooded out here not so long ago. So it was pretty appropriate. So, mate, you're tuning in from Dallas, Texas.
Yes, I am sitting right here in my training room in my office here in Bedford in the Dallas area.
Nice. And tell me, do you have a cowboy hat?
I haven't actually bought one. You know, I have some boots. I have some boots. I will say that much.
Yeah.
But I haven't bought a cowboy hat yet. Probably after this show, I'll go get one.
Yeah, mate, you got to fit in, you know. Well, I mean, and tell me this: you must. Are you at least on the football bandwagon?
Yes, you know, I support cowboys at least, okay. But I'm into baseball a little bit more. My son plays baseball.
Yeah, man.
So actually, they had a game yesterday. So I'm into baseball, and of course, you know, I'm into soccer as well. I play soccer.
Sure. Texas, yep. I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a Toronto Blue Jays tragic, so you're speaking my language.
Anyway, that is awesome.
We're not here to talk about baseball. We're actually here to talk about how we can create more profit in fewer hours. So before we get started, I might get you to give us a little bit of an intro as to you and your background. And I know you've written a book. Definitely let us know about that. Just so the listeners have a bit of context. Fire away.
Sure. Again, I was born and raised in Cameroon, West Africa. I know a lot of people ask me about that. You know, and I know when I go to speak in certain places, I give people a little bit of a warning. I would say my accent is a little bit different from yours here in the U.S. So you have to pay close attention. And if you don't hear anything I say, I'm going to put it in a book. And if you read it in a book and you don't understand, that is your problem, because there's no accent on paper, you know.
Mate, I completely relate to that. The last time I was presenting in America, we were in Vegas, and I could see half the audience when I was talking. They were giving me that look like, what is he sort of talking about? And I said, listen, I know I've got a funny accent. I'm from a little island just south of Florida. And if you're like, oh, okay, that's weird. And then after the show, they were like, which island south of Florida? And I'm like, it's about 6,000 miles south of Florida, Australia.
Yeah. Awesome. But I came to the U.S. 2003, went to business school, and finished business school and started a consulting company. And I really became fascinated with construction, because I like structure a lot. Mm. I recently just built a custom home. Before I built that home, you know, I took my kids to the lot. And I said to them, kids, when do you start building a house? you know, and they gave me different answers. And I said, really? When you start, you start building a house after you finish the house. And my daughter said, Dad, how can you finish a house and then you start building a house? I said, because the blueprint is the house.
Right.
So when you finish the blueprint, that is the house and you start building it. So I really became fascinated with the construction industry because it deals with blueprints. And then you start the construction. So it really speaks my language. So I became fascinated with the industry. And of course, I started working with a couple of companies in the industry and just fell in love with you know, the construction industry, which is probably why my agent, let me put it that way, you know, found you and knows mm-hmm. that your show is about tradespeople and construction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and made the introduction. And one of the things that fascinates me about the construction is, or a passion is, I see a lot of them working so hard, but they struggle with very tiny margins. You know, that sure. is why, you know, obviously we want to talk about more profit, you know, fewer hours. They struggle with tiny margins and they work for so many hours. So that's a little bit of a background that I believe that is obviously relevant to what mm. we are talking about, you know, today.
Sure. Yeah. And one of the reasons that I like speaking to you appealed to me was because we do have a lot of conversations within our community and with our, you know, our audience base in relation to, you know, systemizing your business and removing yourself from areas of your business. And it's something that I preach myself massively. Like I'm really big on, you know, creating processes, building organizational charts, and you know removing yourself from areas in the business where your time is probably not best spent. So this is a very complimentary conversation in the sense that, you know, these are things that we do, you know, our listeners do definitely want to learn about. How can we remove ourselves from areas of the business which is going to improve our profit margins and, you know, that kind of thing. And at the same time, buy a bit of time back. So, it'll be a very good chat. And for you guys out there that are listening to this, we've had a few conversations recently in relation to cash flow and in relation to, you know, creating financial freedom and that kind of thing. And even the previous episode we just had with a gentleman called Jackson Miller, and we spoke a little bit to some of those levers around creating financial freedom. So I think this conversation is going to tie in beautifully to that because it all sounds very, very complimentary. So anyway, getting back to, I suppose, tell me a little bit about, you've written a book. I haven't read it. I apologize. But I'll post the link for you guys out there in the Amazon link within this, wherever you see this, if it's a post or if it's over at the show notes and you get hold of that. The business system that never fails. I guess we're going to be talking a little bit about that business system in this podcast. If I jump too far ahead, Benson, you can reel me back in. But do you want to give us a bit of an overview to the book and where that came from?
Absolutely. I wrote a book in 2013. And the motivation in writing the book is, you know, after living in the U.S. for a number of years, you know, I discovered that over 80% of the businesses fail within the first 15 years. So I was saying to myself, wow, with all the technology and all the advancement in the U.S., why are so many businesses failing? And I discovered that part of the reason of that failure is many businesses are not running on universal principles that are guaranteed to work anywhere. So I said to myself, you know, how can I give any business the foundational universal principle, whether you are in Australia or in America or in Africa, if they run their business based on this principle, it will not fail. You know, for example, you and I were talking about rain in Australia. I guarantee if you take a grain of corn and you plant it in Australia, that grain of corn is going to grow irrespective of the economy of Australia. the grain of corn is not going to say, man, it's Australia. The economy is not good. I'm not going to grow. If you take the same grain of corn and take it to Africa and plant it there, the grain of corn will grow irrespective of the economy. The grain of corn will grow irrespective of your skin color. No. The grain of corn will say, oh, I can't grow because you're a black person, or because you're a white man, or because you're a woman, or because you're a man. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is you know the universal principle and you are applying it.
Sure.
So I wrote that book in order to give people that foundation. Plus, you know, I saw so many people who were successful financially, but their homes were crumbling. Mm. And then in terms of personal fulfillment, they were really lost. So in the book, I really talk about succeeding in business, but also succeeding personally and having that fulfillment, and also succeeding spiritually, because, you know, at the end of the day, we want to have, you know, success in all these other areas to have a very fulfilling life. So really, that is the gist of, you know, the book that anybody can read. People who are looking at starting a business, people who are already running a business, anybody can read and get something out of it that can apply and really transform their lives.
Yeah, and I love, and for you guys out there that are sort of, if you haven't come across this yet, you inevitably will, but, you know, most coaching programs and, you know, there's a lot of material out there which preach balance, you know, and you see it all too often where people that are so absorbed in their business, you know, they're sacrificing their, you know, time with their kids, or they're sacrificing, you know, health and fitness, and they're sacrificing things that they shouldn't. You know, there's balance that needs to be, you know, created, and there's a lot of these like charts and things which sort of speak to different things and where you need to improve. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, whatever, I'm not interested in this, I just want to make money. And then as you develop more and more in business, you're like, okay, now I need a bit more balance. I've got two kids now, I need to spend a bit more time. And I think that really talks a lot to you know, more profit and fewer hours. Like within those fewer hours, you know, it does give you the ability to find balance, and whatever that means to you, if it's, you know, spending time with your kids or spending time with your friends or training or hobbies or whatever it might be. But I think like it's amazing, you know, as you mature in business and as you mature in life, how intertwined these things are. And, you know, if you just sell out all to your business and you do nothing but that, like you you find that you do get burned out and you find yourself in these ruts and you're like, oh, you start lacking productivity, you know, whereas when you start intertwining, you know, things like hobbies and social life and hanging out with friends and keeping fit and all this sort of stuff, you know, everything sort of like, it's like the rising tide, you know, the ship just starts floating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially health. That is an area I see many entrepreneurs neglecting. But Matt, you and I know that you can make all the money you want to make, but if you end up sleeping in the hospital,
sure,
you know, for a long period of time, you're just spending that money. And so you don't really get to enjoy, you know, that money because you sacrifice your health to make more money. But as you said, you know, taking care of all of these aspects, it just makes life to be a lot more enjoyable.
Sure.
As you continue to grow and scale the business.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been many people on their deathbed wishing they had more money. It's more about health and happiness and the legacy they leave. So, so it's interesting. And I'm guessing you cover that in the book. So for you guys out there, again, it's called the Business System That Never Fails. I will post links to the Amazon links in the, wherever you see this, in the post or in the show notes, so you can go check that out. But today we're going to be talking about, I mean, I know you've got this, the five profit maximizers thing, and I think we're going to be talking a lot to that. So what led you down the five profit maximizer path?
I just saw so many clients and business owners that I talked to swamped with so much distraction.
Distraction or destruction?
Distractions.
Right.
Distraction, Z-I-S-T-R-A-C-I-T-I-O-N, distractions.
It's that Texan accent, mate. I just...
Yeah, so much distractions. And as a result, you know, when you go to the office or when you go to work and you are distracted with so many things, instead of focusing on the few things that matter most, you end up working so many hours.
Mm.
So that is one of the reasons I saw so many business owners working longer hours than they really necessarily need to. Or, you know, again, you and I have, you know, connect on this. These business owners end up doing activities that they should have delegated to their team to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is another form of distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up spending time in these activities that they shouldn't be doing instead of focusing on the activities they should be doing. I know this other book is a popular book. Many of your listeners might know about it. It's called The E-Myth.
Yeah,
it was written by Michael Gerber. So he talks about working in the business and working on the business. So, of course, working on the business talks about creating the systems, which I know you are a very big preacher about that. But there's another aspect that is seldom talked about, which is walking above the business.
Mm.
So you go beyond walking on the business and you start walking above the business.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have people who are managing the systems and you are really just supervising the management of, you know, of those systems. But the five profit maximizers were really born when I looked at how every business that is successful is operating. I said, you know, what are the five common denominators that every successful business has? That if any business will focus on those five maximizers, that's really all they need.
From the perspective of finance and profit, is that right?
What is that?
You're talking, but they're those. These are the levers from the finance side of the business, yeah?
The entire business, not just the finance.
Hmm. Interesting.
The entire business. You will fit any aspect of any business within those five profit maximizers.
Okay. We'll have this conversation as we get into it, I'm sure, but I'd love to see where, you know, looking at this, where strategy fits in, where team building fits in, like recruitment, HR, all that kind of stuff.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and I also hope that you have a plan in place to implement AI into your trade business, and I hope you have one soon, because if you don't, you are going to get left behind. Head across to tradiehub.net and check out the cool stuff that we're doing over there with AI for trade-based businesses all over the world. It is an absolute game changer. Go check it out. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
Absolutely. So, for example, you just mentioned recruitment, HR, you know, where it fits in. So it'll fit in under what I call the profit margin maximizer.
Right.
So if you are going to hire people, you first of all have to ensure that you have the cash, you know, to hire them. And you want to hire people based on performance. So you are sure that you are hiring an asset that is going to be producing more revenue instead of just, you know, occupying an organizational chart.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to ensure that those things are there. So by the time you are now hiring those people and bringing them on board, you are really bringing them to increase your capacity to be able to produce more revenue. And because you hire profitably, more of that revenue should be going to your bottom line.
Sure.
So if at any given time your payroll is more than 30% of your revenue, you have an inefficient system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top heavy.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So that will fit in under that maximizer. So any aspect that we can look at, I just put everything under those five big maximizers. And if you move one of them, it will affect your bottom line directly. If you move two of them, it will affect your bottom line more. If you move three of them, it will affect your bottom line even more. If you move four or five of them, any one or a combination of the five, it goes directly to improve and grow your profit.
Yeah. So I run a marketing agency for tradespeople, and I know the first lever that you have, first consistent profit maximizer lever there is consistent leads. And so yes. I'd love to discuss that, because I know, I read through the PDF that you've given us as well. And I love the conversation around and it's definitely relevant for the conversations I have pretty much every day with clients. It's not, mm-hmm. And this was probably something where I think a lot of people don't truly understand this concept. And when you're new in business, you mm-hmm. kind of take all any of the work you can get, because you need to pay bills and that kind of stuff, which I get. But mm-hmm. as you evolve in business, you can decide to be a little bit more choosy with who you work with, and you can qualify and really start working with people that you want to work with and that suits your business model. And, you know, in truth, we reject more people these days than we work with in terms of inquiries, because they don't really fit our avatar. And so I'd love to hear your take on, when it comes to leads, that whole conversation around, well, defining what a qualified lead is for your business and how to define that avatar specifically, so that you're working with the right type of people, the right type of jobs, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Matt, you're doing a great job helping people define that. But the biggest mistake that I see even people who are starting doing is they just take, as you said, take any type of job because they want something. But I'll recommend against that. I would say right from the get-go, invest some time to define who your ideal client is going to be. And I know, Matthew, you have a new program out there called the Opportunity Metrics. I know it can help people to really identify where they have their best opportunity. You know, in your other shows, you talk about, you know, this tradesperson who was doing a lot of residential work, and that's where a lot of their margins were coming, but they were spending so much resources in other areas. Mm-hmm. And once they were able to cut off those other areas and focus their resources on the residential, boom, I mean, they were spitting out profit like no man's business. So I would say from the very get-go, muster that iron hat to really define, this is who I am going to work with, because this is who fits my skill set the best.
Yeah.
And then only go for those kind of leads. Even if you struggle from the very beginning, after a period of time, you are going to grow your business a lot more faster than just taking any type of business because you want to survive from the very beginning. So investing the time to really determine who is your ideal person or client to work with, and I know you have programs to also help people in that area, would be the best way to really go about it. So you can really now focus to go only after those people, because over time, when demand far exceeds supply, prices are going to go up. That's a simple law of economics. Yep. But if you are not having the right kind of demand, you are not going to be bold enough to raise your prices to the level that is really worth, you know, who you are. And unfortunately, a lot of tradespeople kind of undercharge themselves.
Yeah, well, that's true. And that's one thing, I suppose, where the one thing I would add to that, if you are starting in business, sometimes you don't actually have, and this was relevant for us, like, we didn't really know at that point in time, because we were new, what that ideal client looked like. Like, it took us a couple of years to figure that out. And so, you know, like, on paper at the beginning, we were like, oh, we just want to work with tradespeople. And then, you know, over a couple of years, like, we were able to really define an avatar based on who our best customers were, the best type of work we did, where we specialized, where we niched. And so that kind of morphed into that position. And we get a lot of businesses today that'll come to us and they're like, I'm a plumber and I specialize in everything plumbing. And I'm like, okay, well, that's going to be a marketing nightmare for one, because you're competing against a lot of noise. But second of all, like over time, we noticed these businesses, and we have loads of clients that have done this really well. Like, they might have started as plumbers, but then over the years they've morphed into hot water specialists, pipe reliners, whatever it might be. And they've really found like where their strong point is within their vertical, and they've been able to double down on that, which means it's a lot easier to market for them because, you know, it's more niched. It means they can charge more because they're now specialists as opposed to generalists. And they're actually doing work that's more profitable. They're better at it. So their costs and their profit margins are better off the back of it. And it's just a more enjoyable experience for them. And it means training and things like that is a lot more simplified because they're not trying to be everything to everyone. No, they're really focusing in on that vertical. So I've found that kind of sometimes does take a bit of time. What's your experience?
Yeah, it does. It does take a little bit of time. And it's going to take a lot more time if you decide to go in and do it on your own. I know it took you a little bit of time, Matt, because probably when you started, you didn't have somebody to guide you. So you ended up finding out by trial and error. But yeah. I would say to people who are listening to us, why try to go do it by trial and error when you have a Math right there, in your backyard, who can save you those 2-3 years of trying to figure it out, to give you a little bit of guidance, in the right direction. And then with that right direction, it will take a little bit of experimenting. But instead of spending 3 years to figure that out, it could be 6 months. Because you have a guide who is guiding you down the road. So I agree with that, Matt, but I would never go into doing some of the things, spending some of the time I spend, in figuring out my own as well, if from the very beginning I had somebody to guide me.
Sure.
We didn't just have that. So I would say it would not be a wise thing for somebody to try to figure this out by themselves when they have somebody like you who can guide them and save them a lot of time, energy, and money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that'll be my recommendation.
And I think as well, like, it's what we've noticed now. And so you take a lot of our clients that are builders, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So most of these guys don't have a lead problem, but they have a qualified lead problem to a degree. So like our position becomes more about, well, it's not a numbers game for them. Like most of our builder clients are booked out 2 years in advance. So, but what becomes relevant to them is, well, like they don't want to be wasting their time having conversations with people that are potentially not yet qualified to have that conversation. So how do you take them through that journey or that segue until they come to a point where, okay, now they're ready? So for example, builders, back in the day, we would just drive traffic and get them inquiries to their websites. But then the builders were like, my phone's just ringing all day and it's with people that are just wasting my time. So we're like, that's interesting. Okay, well, how do we take what we're currently doing and how do we drive them into some sort of education or nurture campaign or something, or even just a form where we're like, have you got these things in order? And if so, then come talk to us. But if not, here's the resources which you're going to need to have, or here's people you need to speak to, or whatever it might be. This is like essentially equipping them with whatever they need at that point within their journey in order to, be more qualified, so that when they come to the builder, they're like, yes, I've arranged finance. I have drawings done. I have an engineer's report. I have this. I have that. I have all these things in order, so they can go, right, here you go. This is what you wanted. We're ready to go. So it's interesting because it became a conversation of actually creating, in a way, less leads, but but higher conversion off the less leads.
Absolutely. And that's the holy grail, because I prefer to have, 10 leads and convert 8 of them. which would be 80% conversion, than to have 100 leads and convert 10 of them.
Yeah.
You know, which is a 10% conversion. One of the amazing things that we have been able to do for our clients here in the US, and of course it can apply anywhere in the world, is the concept of membership. And when I introduced this in the service industry, almost every company I went to, they first of all told me, Benson, this membership thing doesn't work in our industry. I said, forget it, it works. And some of them, it took them 3 years before I could convince them. Some of them, it took them 6 months before I could convince them, you know, to put it in place. But every single company that has put it in place, they usually say to me, Benson, why didn't we do this earlier? I said, because you were dumb. You didn't listen. You know, because what a membership does is, like, you know, one of our clients now, they only do they are primarily dealing with members. So when you reach out to them and you have, it's a foundation drilling company. When you reach out to them and you have, you know, a project to work on, they'll first of all say, hey, we work primarily with members, and these are the rates for our members. Then it spurs up the conversation. Well, what does it take to become a member? Then they'll give them a membership fee. And so as they are going through that membership process, it helps our clients to know if they are a good fit or not.
Interesting.
And because they have already paid a fee for membership, they are not wasting their time with any Tom, Dick, and Harry. And it's very, very clear that if they don't qualify to be a member, then they are going to pay customer rates until they are ready to become a member. Then the member rates are going to be available for them.
I know that this has been a, we've had a few conversations around this actually in podcasts in the past. And I'll find the link to them for the show notes, because I'm not going to look at it now. But I know that's something that a lot of, like, talk about the Holy Grail. I mean, for service businesses, you know, that's like, that would be, it's such an amazing thing to have some sort of membership program, scheduled maintenance program, or whatever you want to call it. And a lot of guys struggle with the like how that actually looks structurally, and how to deliver on it in an honest way. And I know there are some companies out here that do it quite well. And there's also some verticals which I feel it works a lot better for. For example, residential home builders, I think they struggle with it, because it's like, well, we've built the house and it's done. Like, what sort of membership value can I give them beyond coming back and fixing defects and that kind of thing, right? Whereas obviously, if you're a maintenance plumber, or if you're a landscape gardener, or if you're a, you know, residential electrician, you know, you can do periodic calls, you can do scheduled drain cleaning, you can do, you know, scheduled lawn care and that kind of stuff. It sort of lends itself a little bit more to those sort of verticals. But what's your take on that?
Well, again, there are some that are very obvious. Like you just said, you know, residential cleaning, your house is going to get dirty, you know, in the next 1 week or so. So
especially with that,
is a lot. That is a lot more, you know, obvious, you know, to see. But most builders, for example, you've mentioned building, most builders, they build residential or they build commercial, and when they are done, they are done. If I were them, instead of, you know, building that house and getting done with it, actually in the course of building the house, they use a lot of subcontractors. So is they can look for ways to connect with those subcontractors directly and establish their membership program that way.
Yeah. We've actually got a couple of builder clients that do that really well. So they'll do things, and a lot of them are sort of in the green building space, where they've got a lot of things they can do, like beyond the initial build, in the space of reporting, diagnostics, solar panels, you know, checking, like, again, utilizing other trades, of course, But they similar to like kind of what you just said, then they'll leverage those sort of things, and it's a great way to get back in the door. And the homeowner typically loves it because, of course, these are things that, first of all, they, if the builder doesn't organize it, they're very unlikely to until something breaks. So yep. it's a very good angle for a lot of those.
Yeah, any builder who thinks about, because the membership program, Matt, is really about a win-win situation for you and the client. Because if you have that in place, then you help your members not to spend so much time, energy, and money trying to look for these different people who are going to come to help them. Because at some point down the road, they are going to need those services anyway.
Sure.
You know, so putting them together and offering it to their clients is really a win-win situation of anything that really needs maintenance.
Yeah.
Which is 100% of things, a membership program can be put in place. Some will require a little bit of creativity, you know, which is why it varies from company to company. But I'm yet to see you give me any industry whatsoever or any company whatsoever in the world. I've not seen anyone that putting a membership program is, you know, difficult. I mean, they usually say it doesn't work, but just a little bit of conversation to see how the whole business model is, voila, a membership program can be in place.
Yeah, sure. I think the big thing the big objection, or maybe not objection, but like resistance point that I see with these is the paradigm shift. And it's the whole just trying to fathom it conceptually, and how they've never having done something like that. How could they add something like that into a business model that they've been running for, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40 years? Like that's often the biggest obstacle that a lot of business owners have to overcome. That's true for anything, of course. Like you put technology into the picture, for example, you know, like, oh, we've always written our invoices on carbon copy, you know, books. Why would we get an app that does it, you know, until they do it? And they're like, holy shit, why did I never do this 20 years ago? You know, like, and again, we're kind of preaching to the choir here. People that are here listening to this, they're sort of already converted into a lot of these frameworks. But I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, and you said, you know, some of these things might take a little bit of creativity. Yeah. I can almost guarantee if you just turned your phone off and your emails off and you sat down for 25 minutes, you'd come up with a million value adds that you could give to clients beyond the initial build or sell or whatever it is, which could basically fuel the foundation for your membership program. There's no question. You just got to apply the time and put a bit of focus to it.
So the question really is, do you want more profit for your business? If the answer is yes, then invest 25 minutes, as you said, to do it, instead of, you know, spending hours down the road,
yeah,
you know, struggling with a very razor thin margin. So that's what I usually ask people, you know, when they say, oh, this might require a little bit of time. I say, yes, everything requires time. But what do you want? Do you want more profit and fewer hours? Or do you just want to keep doing, you know, things the old way? Just like, you know, if Mr. Ford had to ask people what they wanted, they would have said, hey, give us a faster horse.
Exactly.
You know, he went ahead and said, no, what? You know, a horse requires a lot of maintenance. They have to eat and drink water, and they are slow, and they are tired. They can't go. So he went and, you know, created an automobile for these people. So I agree with you, Mr. Matt. It takes a change of mindset, but most of your people are already open to new things. So if you really want to grow your profit and work fewer hours, then you really have to do some things that you've not done before.
Yeah, and exactly what you said before, like all these things, they take time. It takes time to create time. You know, when you talk about reducing your hours in things, you're never going to do that if you don't strategize it and you don't plan it out and you don't have a really clear understanding of which areas of your business you need to remove yourself from in order to get someone else in to do it, like what sort of cash flow you need to facilitate that. you know, what sort of, you know, what sort of potential possibilities does that open up for you financially if you do remove yourself from these things you shouldn't be doing and you can focus on your sweet spot, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. The point being, just strategize, take the time to do it. And I don't think enough people do that. They get caught up in the grind, the day to day, and they don't sit down and they don't plan these things out, you know? And like that in truth was without question the biggest shift and transition within my businesses. It was like actually spending this time strategically to understand where we want to go and how we're going to get there and then reverse engineering it down into, you know, bite-sized chunks. So if I can, that's my biggest advice to people is just spend the time strategizing.
And it has to be, even when you spend the time strategizing, you have to keep investing a little bit of time to maintain the strategy.
Absolutely.
So that thinking time is always going to be very helpful. Abraham Lincoln, for those who don't know him, I probably doubt most everybody knows him, but he's one of the American presidents. He said, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I will spend 4 sharpening the saw."
That's right.
Because when you sharpen the saw, you use less time, less energy, less, you know, to chop down that tree. But if you just go banking and banking and banking, your hands will be left with blisters, you know, because the saw is not sharp. So strategy is obviously absolutely good, but investing the time to think and keep the strategy fresh saves a lot of time, energy, and money, you know, down the road.
And so you guys out there are thinking, I'd love to do that, but I just haven't got the time. What you need to realize is as your business grows, and if you want your business to grow, or maybe you don't want it to grow, maybe you just want it to evolve into something different. It's not always growth. But the point is, at some point, your role within your business needs to become more strategic in order to make these things play out. And so whatever you're doing day to day, if you're not getting the results you want, then you need to apply time and effort, and you need to make sure that that time becomes part of your process. And otherwise, it will always get relegated behind going and clearing the next block drain, answering the next phone call, or whatever it is. And those things are important, but they're not as important as understanding the bigger picture. And so definitely take the time to sit back and think. And like Benson just said, this isn't a once and done situation. You don't sit there and create a 12-month goal and then never revisit it. You need to sit down and you need to track it methodically, weekly, if you can. Like spend 20 minutes a week and make sure that you're doing the things that are adding up to that bigger picture. Benson, a couple of years ago, we introduced into our business a scorecard system.
Yep.
And the scorecard system, essentially, with all of our team members and with the business has quarterly goals, which tie to annual goals, but they're specific and they're measurable. So by that, I mean, we want to have X number of people on X program, or we want to have a profit margin of 35% or something very specific. It's a you've either done it or you haven't. And then every single team member also has a scorecard, and their scorecard is also specific. And so over the next 3 months, they're working towards this, this, and this, and they're all very specific. There's no like, oh, I'm not sure if we've done this. You've done it or you haven't. And it's not because we don't expect everyone to achieve everything on their scorecard, but we know, because we've tested this, that if people have a clear understanding of what they're working towards on sort of more of a macro picture, it makes the micro things they do day to day a lot more transparent and a lot more focused. And so it's been an amazing shift for us, because people have, with 100% clarity, they know exactly what they're doing. And there's no apprehension. There's no, well, I thought she was doing that, or I thought he was going to be doing that. No, because they know, right? And it's designed. And they design it themselves, in truth. Like, we say to them, what do you want to be working on for the next 3 months? It's going to add to this bigger picture. And they come up with it, and we help them jig it. And it's amazing focus, you know? And it's simple. It's simple to do. And we address it weekly. We go through the scorecard system with them. We see what they're on track for, what they're not. And if they're not on track for something, because we address it weekly, we can make tiny shifts which readjust the trajectory and put them back in line. If we did that every quarter, it's too far gone. You can't reel it back in.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you do that, what you guys have done, I'll bet that what you have put in place, which is very similar to what we do with all our clients, is now you tend to attract A players.
Yes.
Because A players, they like report cards.
Sure.
You know, C players don't want any accountability. They run away from it, like, you know. So just putting that in place in your business, I am very sure that you are attracting A players. The thing that I might add, and if you guys are not yet doing it, I strongly encourage that you add it, is for every role to say to everybody, if you only had to do one activity a day, Monday to Friday, that will contribute the most to that quarterly goal, just one activity, what would that one activity be? Once that is established and that person is doing it every single day, rain or shine, I mean, the leverage goes off the roof. And then we'll go a step further.
It's so funny you've said that. But go, carry on.
Yeah, then you go a step further. Okay, if you only had to do another activity once a week, that will contribute the most towards that quarterly goal, what will it be? Now, for us and our clients, that daily one is the most important because it established an amazing level of consistency. Mm-hmm. Because what I've seen with many business owners is, you know, we're talking to tradespeople here, construction people, is they will market and get a lot of business coming in. Then once they have that business coming in, they go on a vacation, they stop marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And then their pipeline kind of dries up when the projects are finishing up. And then they realize, oh my goodness, I've stopped marketing. You know, let me get back into marketing. So they go through this roller coaster of feast and famine. But once you establish that, okay, in marketing, this has to be done every single day. In follow-up, this has to be done every single day. In all departments, this has to be done every single day. Then you build an amazing level of consistency throughout the organization. And I say all the time that consistency compounds results.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that because, like, with this scorecard system we've had, you know, we've got the outcome and we've had the KPI. So, like, how do you measure it? And then we had our quarterly meeting last Friday. And I said to the team, so for every one of these outcomes now, I've introduced a column into your scorecard and you'll see it says positive habit. And the positive habit is how you plan or what you plan on implementing into your day in order to make that outcome become a reality. And the team was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense because, like, it was there in front of them. And we have, like, a very comprehensive project management, you know, system of checklists and all that kind of stuff for the team to follow. But on the macro level, it didn't really speak to the daily habit. And so, you know, we run a stand-up meeting system with our team, and every morning they check in and they talk about the top three things they're going to be working on every day. And it works really well. Except what was happening was people were just talking about, you know, the business as usual stuff that they'll be doing. And I'm like, guys, this is what this is about. Like, I want you to be like, these things should be talking to the bigger picture things that you're going to be working on. So off the back of that, we're going to be implementing this thing where every week we're basically going to give each team member an hour to work on something that's not business as usual. And we're going to pay them to do it. Like, it's like, and there'll be incentives and we can make a real fun, like, gamification, you know, sort of process around this. But, like, essentially getting, enabling them to, like, use and leverage some of their creativity beyond what they have to do day to day, which in the marketing sense space can be quite boring and quite repetitive. You know, it's a lot of, especially when you look at SEO and that kind of stuff, like, these guys have got these checklists like you wouldn't believe, things they have to do. and it's important, it's got to get done. But, you know, we still, a lot of these people are very, most people actually are very creative. They've got a lot they can add. And so we want to help them showcase that creativity, you know, express it. So it's this ever, and this is what I'm talking about as well, Benson, like this journey is ever going. Like I'm constantly learning new ways and you know, things that you can apply to these processes to make it a better system, you know. It's never never a destination.
If you stop updating, then you'll soon be outdated.
Yeah.
So updating is ongoing. And what you just mentioned, I'm sure probably you already know this, but it's a company in the US, yeah, and it's an international company as well. It's called 3M.
Oh yeah, the film company, like stickers.
Actually, the 3M, they have this what they call sticker notes.
Yeah.
You know, the sticker notes that most of us use, right? Sticker notes and stick them that are adhesive.
Yeah, they do stationary, they do like windows wrapping and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, like film.
Exactly. So they establish what you just described in that company. They give all their engineers and the scientists there an hour or so every week to come up with a creative, just unleash their creativity. Mm. And that is what has resulted to some of those scientists and engineers coming up with an amazing innovative project that has really helped the company to grow.
Well, do you know, you may or may not know, Google have done that for decades. That's mm-hmm. That's where Gmail came from.
Yeah.
So Gmail came from that exact thing where they said their team, each of their team member gets a certain period of time every week they can apply to a project. And someone came up with Gmail from that. And now it's the biggest email, free email provider on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing when you have structure and then you also have flexibility. It's an amazing combination because I see many people resist structure. They say, oh, I'm not a structure person, I'm creative. I say, well, the structure will help you to actually amplify your creativity.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because essentially what you're doing is you're creating boundaries for people to be creative within. And I say this to people all the time, like people go, oh, I don't want to create systems because it ruins creativity. I go, no, systems encourage creativity because it's saying these are your boundaries and do whatever you want within that. You don't have to micromanage it. Mm-hmm. I suppose for context and to make it a little bit more relatable to you guys out there in the field, okay, you're a builder, you're a plumber, you're a sparky, whatever it might be, like how do you deploy something like that within your organization when all my guys do is go mow lawns? But I mean, take for a consider, like for example, you know, that time they could be spending from a creative perspective, it might be, okay, well, how can I document and improve the customer experience? How can I do a better job when I get to, like, how can I, you know, apply some time this week to figuring out how I can make this a better journey for my customers or for the customers mm-hmm. I visit? Or how could I spend this time this week to make it an easier process from a managerial point of view? Like, how can I document things better? How can I take photos better? How can I, how can I report back to the office better? How can I improve the conversations between, you know, dispatch and, or, you know, the call taker through to accounts, you know, once the job's been completed or whatever it might be? Like, there's a million different things you could do, but you kind of have to take the blinkers off and, you know, be a little bit creative in the way you approach these things.
Yeah. So if the owner just even makes the people, I do this in my own house. You know, I tell my children that every day they need to ask a question they have not asked before. So even in the context of a business, if the owner challenges their people to ask a question that they haven't asked before every week, and the answer of that question is obviously going to improve a process they are doing, boy, that'll be an amazing addition. But now all of them know that they have to ask a question every week. That becomes an amazing habit.
Sure.
That will transform that business, no matter how small or how big the business is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these, well, in my experience, pretty much everything, in truth, when it comes to, like, business progress, succeeding, so on. Like success leaves, you know, clues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we're talking about here is creating positive habits which have that outcome. You know, for example, if you've got this big picture goal, you know, that goal is a wish until you break it down into actions and then habits to create and deliver on those actions, right? So like you say, if it's a sales position, it might be, okay, well, I'm going to make 5 calls a day. I'm just going to do 5 calls a day. That's it. That's the habit. I'm doing 5 calls a day. And like those outcomes and your sales targets will be directly reflected by those little habits. There's a great book you can read. You probably have read it, called Atomic Habits by a guy called James Clear. It's fantastic. Yep. And there's another one I just read, which is up here on my bookshelf, which I can't quite read. But anyway, there's like these books basically inspire you to, you know, change things within your day, which encourage positive habits, positive outcomes, so on and so forth. And until you're willing to do that, in my experience, until you're willing to embrace that mindset and actually do the thing, which is not always comfortable as well, right? There was that, you probably read that book, Eat the Frog, you know, where they talk about, okay, get the uncomfortable things out of the way first. Like, it's true. Like, you've really got to make a cadence of it, and you've got to stick to it. And it's the same with fitness. It's the same with like everything, you know, like you've just create positive habits, and it'll ripple down into all areas of business and life. So anyway, mate, look, it's been a great conversation. I feel like we're sort of getting towards the end of it anyway. Is there anything that you wanted to cover specifically that we haven't yet?
Yeah, I think you mentioned the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. I have a copy right here in my bookshelf on my right. Mm-hmm. And many books have been written about habits. But one of the things that I see that at times becomes challenging for business owners, you know, tradespeople about habits is they at times tie their habits to the activity. So it makes it difficult to build that habit versus tying the habit to time. Let me explain. So somebody's in sales. So instead of saying, I'm going to build a habit to make 5 phone calls a day, which is an amazing habit. But at times that habit can become very challenging to build if, let's say, day one, they only made 1 phone call. Day two, they only made 3 phone calls. So they can become discouraged over time. What I encourage people to do is to say, okay, I'm going to make 5 phone calls a day, and those phone calls, they might take me 60 minutes. So instead of focusing on the phone calls, to focus on the 60 minutes. Mm. To say, I'm going to invest 60 minutes every day making phone calls. So now the clock becomes your friend.
I gotcha.
And you just focus on those 60 minutes. And you put them on your calendar that from 10 to 11 or 9 to 10, this is my time for making phone calls. And if the president of Australia calls me during that time, I am not answering because that time is dedicated towards making my phone calls, you know, for that day. So that becomes a sacred time for those calls. And what I've discovered over time is if you make 1 phone call the first day for those 60 minutes and you keep investing those 60 minutes every day to make phone calls, over time, you move to making 3 phone calls or 4 phone calls. So now, over time, you are investing the exact same amount of time, but your productivity is increasing because you are a compound effect.
There's so much power in time blocking. There's a technique which I'm sure most of the listeners probably would not be familiar with, but no doubt you would be, and it's called the Pomodoro technique. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it's time blocking. But what it basically enables you to do is for a 25-minute period of time only, you work on one specific thing. And you don't answer phone calls. You don't, well, unless it's, of course, that 25-minute time block is making phone calls. But the point is, you turn your distractions off, you don't do anything but that one thing for 25 minutes, and you break your day up into these 25 minute blocks. And after 25 minutes, you give yourself 5 minute break, and then you do another 25 minutes, you have a 5 minute break, and then like there's a cadence behind it, and you have lunch and all this kind of stuff, blah blah blah, whatever. But the point being, and this is one of the things that I'm going to implement as part of this non-business as usual thing that we're rolling out to our team. It's every week apply two Pomodoros, which is two 25-minute time blocks to whatever you want. And like you said, you're selling out to the clock there. You're not actually necessarily selling out to the tasks that happen within that time period. So mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that's such a powerful thing when you can actually say, for the next insert time block, I'm just going to do this one thing. Because it's incredible how much you can get done in 25 minutes if you just sell out to that one thing. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
The thing that Absolutely. We always do, and you see it even on site, like when, and you know, like you guys up, you know, out on the site to do a job, and their phone rings, so they answer the phone, and they go back to the job, and then the client comes talks to them. So then they go talk to the client, then they go back to the job, and then one of their techs comes and asks them for help with something. And like you're 6 hours down the track, and you haven't done the one thing you set out to do in the middle of your day. And so I think what you just said is so powerful, and I really encourage you guys out there to adopt time blocking and whatever you want to call it. If you want to use the Pomodoro technique, and the bloody people out there go, Pomodoro, doesn't that mean a tomato? Yes, it does. Don't go and research it. It's basically a little tool where you hit a button and it's a timer and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, whatever you want to do with it, it doesn't really matter. But the point being, set time aside for specific things, and you'll be amazed when you apply your energy to those without distraction, how much you get done and how much that moves the needle.
Absolutely. And since we are talking to trace people here, I want to leave them with this image. Whenever I talk about this time issue, some people say, but Benson, I'm really good at multitasking. And I usually say, you cannot poop in two toilets at the same time without making a mess, no matter how good you are, you know. So just put your butt in one toilet and finish the business there. Don't try to use two toilets at the same time. You're going to make a mess, no matter how good you are.
You should put that on a T-shirt. That's gold. All right, mate. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. And for the listeners and viewers out there, if you want to get in touch with Benson, or you want to check out his stuff, consistentprofittree.com is the website. The 5 profit maximizers are going to be available through the show notes. You can head across there and you can get them. And if you want to get hold of his book, which I'm at this point strongly suggesting you do based on this conversation, there'll be a link to it in the show notes, but it's The Business System That Never Fails. It's on Amazon. I've got the Amazon link in the show notes, and we'll stick it in this post wherever you see it on social or on YouTube or whatever. Mate, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Absolutely, Matt. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, thank you for so much for the work that you are doing. You know, most of the time, people look at what they do, and because it's easy for you to do it and you enjoy doing it, you might not really receive the appreciation that you deserve. So as an outsider, I want to say to you, Matt, thank you so much for all the work you are doing to help, you know, businesses, not just in Australia, but around the world. I really believe that you are making a big difference, because every business that you are helping, there's a ripple effect that affects the family members behind, you know, that business. And I really believe that is also making a big difference in the economy. So thank you so much for all the things that you do. And thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate those words. Thank you very much. That's lovely to hear. And mate, we look forward to chatting in the future. So let's stay connected. And guys, if you've got any further questions or anything that you wanted to ask Benson specifically, his email is going to be in the show notes, so you can reach out to him there. And I'm sure he'd be more than willing to come back and talk to specifically to any one of those levers or any questions or any experiences that you might have had. So mate, thanks again for your time. And that's a wrap.
hope you enjoyed that podcast, and I also hope that you have a plan in place to implement AI into your trade business, and I hope you have one soon, because if you don't, you are going to get left behind. Head across to tradiehub.net and check out the cool stuff that we're doing over there with AI for trade-based businesses all over the world. It is an absolute game changer. Go check it out. Look forward to speaking to you soon.